Back to Bibliosynensis.
Hi, Hauntiers. Happy summer.
So, we finally made it.
This is the season finale. We never thought we'd have a season finale, but...
Here we are.
Thank you guys for humoring our project here. It's been a lot of fun, and it's been a really great outreach to meet everyone out there.
Yeah, exactly. I've been enjoying a lot of the replies and everybody that's actually taking advantage of our quizzes and, you know, replying to any of our posts. So, you guys have been amazing. Thank you.
Yeah, so to all the tea and book lovers, here's a toast to you.
To our Hauntiers.
Chin chin. So I suppose I should talk about this tea because it just got released this week.
Yes.
This Monday. This is The Golden West, and I have been working on this for how many months already? Almost a year.
Yeah, it has been.
Yeah, I think it's been a year. This is a green tea blend, which I wanted to bring in because we only have Persephone as a green tea blend, and Tiki, which is seasonal, so we don't really have a secondary green tea blend in the store for the primary collection.
Yeah.
Or I guess the main collection. I guess primary is a good way of putting it. But this is actually a tea that's been inspired of our home state right now. It's a California-inspired tea off of the agriculture here. And I think it's easy to say that everybody kind of gets overwhelmed with, like, our landmarks, like our man-made landmarks, would you say?
Yeah, exactly.
Like San Diego and Los Angeles and Hollywood and...
Not as much as Hollywood, as I would see more of Route 66.
Yeah,
or...
and Frisco and all that. Yeah. But I wanted to kind of feature the stuff that we're proud of as Californians, which is our agriculture, and it's... I guess it's like the insider thing to do is to drive up and down our coast.
Yeah, the Pacific.
Coast highways, yeah. And Route 66. And what we do is we see these fields and fields of like produce being made, particularly the strawberries around this time of year. It's strawberry season. And we have like tons of citrus groves and... It's just a really beautiful sight.
You're making me miss all of the festivals right now. We missed the Lavender Festival. Now we're missing the Strawberry Festival.
And then we have the Gilroy Garlic Festival. Oh, but
let's go on. Let's move on.
Yeah, we love us some good produce around here. So this tea actually features some of those, I guess, the most common things you would see. So we have... the lemon peel and the orange peel as an homage to, like, Orange, California. And I don't know a house around here that doesn't have a citrus tree. We have Madame Leota and Oswald the orange tree in the backyard. We even have a tangerine tree that's still growing. So citrus is a big deal here in California, particularly Southern California. And we have the strawberry in there. So I have strawberry oil in this beautiful sencha-based tea. And it just rounds out all the flavors. It's super light and airy. But the surprise note is actually the pink peppercorns. And that gives just a little bit of earthy heat to the tea.
Yeah.
And you see peppercorns everywhere. Particularly, I noticed in our equestrian areas.
Yes. Yes,
so
indeed.
We're actually in a equestrian area ourselves, where we live, and we actually have a grove of pink peppercorn trees in our walking path that we share with all our neighbors.
Yeah, it's just, you just gotta pick it, even though they cost like an arm and a leg in the actual market.
Yeah, we decorate our tables when we entertain with peppercorn leaves, because they're just so common here.
Yeah.
I mean, if you ever see any of our... we'll take pictures of our Thanksgiving spread. It's always laced. We don't do garlands. We just lay peppercorn leaves at the table.
And just to give you guys a hint, we're on the we're on Foothill. So that extends between Shadow Hills and all the way up to La Cañada. So
Yeah, it even continues on to Monrovia.
Does it?
It does.
Oh my goodness.
We're a hop, skip, and away from Foothill Boulevard. So, yeah.
Cheers.
Cheers. So, we thought we'd do something a little different for the finale. There are no articles.
Ta-da!
And I actually asked Eugene to pick his top five summer reading list.
And I asked you to bring up your top five.
So we're going to discuss that today and why we would recommend them. But let's start with what qualifies a good summer read for you?
For me, it's kind of weird. I feel like I don't actually do the stereotypical summer read. You know me, I run to dark fantasy all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing like chummy about that. A summer read, I feel like, is something that you could either read throughout the entire summer, like one giant book, mm-hmm. like The Jungle Book. Like, that's like 300 pages or so.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could read short stories all throughout. I attempted at doing Dumas for a whole summer, thinking Man in the Iron Mask and The Musketeer was enough, but I realized that he actually has an entire saga, about 12 other books, and I could not do it.
Hmm. Okay.
What about you?
So along that light, I kind of did the same, but with Rodol. Okay. And one of my top five is actually a Rodol book. I wonder what you think it is, Hauntiers. Let me know. But I was just amazed at how big of a collection he had as well. And I couldn't finish it myself. it's still an ongoing thing. But, you know, we'll get into that. I guess a summer read for me, I need something that inspires me.
Okay.
Something that lifts me up. I like things that, I guess, put a smile on my face at the end. And kind of get me to ruminate on them.
That's lovely.
Yeah, not necessarily deep, like contemplating the plots. I wouldn't recommend that during summer. But definitely stuff that's lighthearted and interesting, I guess, would definitely be a thing. Maybe a subject you don't always consider.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's... I could tap into that. I mean, I think I have something on my list here. So, would you like to start off?
Yeah, so we'll go backwards and go to our top, I guess.
Would you prefer that?
Yeah, let's do that. So, what is number five on your list?
Number five?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Number five, ironically, was actually Captain America by Ed Brubaker. The Omnibus, the first volume.
Oh.
This was actually the first comic book I bought after I got my first paycheck, and I didn't have the money to buy the whole collection before, so I had to buy the Omnibus, which is literally the whole volume smacked into one binding.
That's exciting.
Yeah, but this is all the precursor to Captain America's death.
Oh.
Yeah, it was kind of shocking because the industry didn't think we cared. And it was kind of shocking because I didn't think I cared. But Captain America died, and that's a huge deal. So, it's a lot of fun. If you guys miss, you know, spy stuff, if you guys miss real good action without superpowers, you know, conspiracy theories and just pure old American guts, try it.
Very cool.
Yes. What about you?
So my number five is actually a Brian Selznick book, and it is Wonderstruck.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Why Wonderstruck?
So since we talked about this tea, I don't know if you noticed, but I'm super inspired by, like, destinations.
Mm-hmm.
It takes place in a lake in Minnesota.
Yes.
The main character's name is Ben. I don't want to go into too much detail because it's a really great read, But Ben has actually lost both his parents, and he's trying to discover who his father was.
Huh.
It's a typical, where's my dad? I'm going to find him sort of story. But I think it's really fascinating because there's another element to the story, which I won't spoil.
Right.
Brian Selznick just does a really good job of making you care about interesting subjects that you didn't think you would care about.
Yeah.
And in this case, he actually uses the theme of natural history and museums.
Oh.
And aids that into his story writing. So I think it's a great read for summer. And I think it's a really fascinating read for summer, especially with COVID times that we're in right now. I think people are wanderlusting or wishing they could go places really bad.
Yes.
But I feel like this is a really good, it sort of transports you away. So I think it's a great read in that sense.
Okay. Wonderful.
So let's move forward.
Okay.
Let's see. What's your number four?
My number four is actually Seven Nights by Jorge Luis Borges.
Okay, that was a mouthful.
I know. It just sounds silly when you say Jorge Borges. So I always put in the Luis because it's obviously that's how you recognize him. He's a Spanish-speaking author that was just an amazing intellectual and he was like guerrilla style educated. I mean, mind you, he is educated, but he actually confesses that the Italian he learned was not Italian. It's the Florentine that they wrote in the Dante's Inferno.
So when was this all written?
I think it was like during the 70s.
How interesting.
Yeah.
So he was trying to revive old arts?
He was kind of, he was part of the deconstruction of it, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because everyone was so into the deconstruction of the institution that they wanted to start exploring things, something new, something different. I mean, like, originally everyone just knew the Greeks and they knew, you know, just like what was considered classic back in those days. I mean, can you imagine? Like, Hemingway and Fitzgerald were not part of that list.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to actually bring that in. They had to actually even write brand new stuff. And Jorge Luis Borges was one of them.
Okay.
Yeah. It's amazing stuff. He reflects a lot over mortality and actually learning, to be honest. I could say more, but I could say that's all I'm about to say.
That's all you're going to say?
That's all
so
I'm
why
say.
Do you recommend it?
Why do I recommend it? He helped me actually enjoy philosophy and poetry in, again, a guerrilla-style manner. It wasn't academic.
If you had to describe his poetry in three words, what would be the descriptives you would use?
Reflective, candid, and pure.
Okay.
Yeah, like Bob Ross kind of pure.
Oh, okay, I can see that.
Yeah. So, he had that kind of hunger for it.
Okay, great.
So, what about you?
Okay, so, we brought up Rodol at the intro. So, this is my Rodol book.
All right.
And it's not what you think it is. So, everyone thinks of Matilda and James and the Giant Peach and Mr. Fox, and I thought that too, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to read Rodol. But then I should have saw it as an omen when I was collecting ghost stories.
Okay.
And one of the most horrific ghost story books that I was recommended was a Rodol book.
Oh,
I haven't read it yet. Still in my collection, very curious. Haven't gotten around to it. So I'm like, man, this man's of many layers.
Right.
And I should have saw that up and coming. So I literally researched all his collections and I've been collecting his books. But this one, I guess, knocked my socks off.
All right.
This one is called Switch.
Oh.
So please censor that. Again, okay. It's, if you didn't catch that, that's Switch the B word. And it is actually a collection of four stories which he published for Playboy magazine between 1965 to 1974.
Oh my.
Yeah. I recommend this book because if you really want to try seeing an author in a completely different light, this is definitely that 180.
All right.
Imagine his humor and his whimsical writing style, writing potty humor.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, sex humor.
Okay.
And that's it in a nutshell. I mean, it is so fascinating. There's one he opens up with, which is, like, the journeys of this famous, like, shag artist, which he's apparently, like, what's that guy, the parody off of 007? Austin Powers.
Austin Powers.
So it's kind of like an Austin Powers vibe.
Okay.
And apparently, like, he has this giant manner, which cracks me up. I apologize for this ahead of time, Paul, but it totally sounds like a perverted version of Professor Elemental.
Oh! Because
he has this giant, like, manner, and it talks about his, I believe it was his nephew, inherited his journals.
Right.
And his journals are all the confessions of his sexcapades. This, like, crazy archaeologist professor character. And he just shows some of those entries, and that's one of the first of the four stories.
I see.
So, I'm curious if he wrote more of that character.
Right.
Very curious. But I'll let you guys know if I find any more. They're excellent reads. They're old. I mean, they feel totally encapsulated in the 60s and 70s.
Right.
They feel like that total Austin Power vibe, but, like, genuine.
Right.
Whereas you're watching Austin Powers and you're thinking, oh, this is, like, a play on a timepiece and it's overdone and kitschy. This really feels like the sex revolution plopped down and you told a children's author to write about the sex revolution in the 60s.
Right.
It's a weird mashup of everything. So highly recommend if you're looking for a good laugh or something a little different.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, are we doing something in between, or what's happening?
Well, I was thinking that we should tell everyone, because obviously we've read these, but what are you currently reading for your summer reads?
My current summer. Okay.
And keep in mind, we read multiple books at a time, so feel free to share those on the list.
Yeah, multiple books right now. I have Old Guard. The Old Guard is a comic book that they recently made a Netflix show about. Before I want to watch it, I kind of want to read it first.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it's an old, you know, I guess, Civil War battalion that's immortal. Hmm. And, you know, they just kind of do missions left and right. And now they got caught in our modern day to be immortals.
Hmm.
I don't know what happens after that.
Oh, okay.
But let's see, what else have I been reading? The View from the Cheap Seats and Norse Mythology.
And those are by...
And, hold on, I think I have one more. It was like The Lake Beyond the Ocean or something like that? I forgot what it was called.
The Ocean at the End of the Lane?
Yes!
So, I'm assuming you're just going on a Gaiman binge.
I am totally doing a Gaiman binge right now.
Okay.
So, it's been a lot of fun, especially Norse mythology. I feel like I was watching, like, reading Jersey Shore the entire time. Like, the Norse gods, like...
Just shenanigans?
Yeah, there's just a lot of shenanigans happening. And Odin just kind of keeps seeing the future and thinking, oh, I could prevent this stuff. And he does more shenanigans, and then it leads to that future. And I'm like, huh. Like, you guys are supposed to be gods. Why? But, obviously, I can't, you know, I love Gaiman so much that I actually had to read The View from the Cheap Seats, because it's all of his prefaces and articles and him just having fangasms over other authors, especially meeting Stephen King. You know, he got to visit his house, he got to talk to him, meet his wife, and see his, like, scary office filled with nothing but papers everywhere. Like, the way he described it, it sounded like a law firm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I have a few. Currently reading Crazy Rich Asians by Kevin Kwan, nice. Which, really love it, really appreciate it, being Asian myself, just all those inside jokes that you get at, like, family gatherings and weird tics from the older generation. I think the movie was charming, but I think the book is more about just the culture and the reason why they behave the way they do.
Mm-hmm.
It talks about everything as to, like, where they got their money, how they preserve their money, what do they expect in their generations going forward.
Was it like the movie, or was it...
It's a little... Okay, so it's a lot like the movie. The movie was pretty good, but I think the movie focused more on the couple, yeah. Whereas the book focuses more on everything else. Like, it actually goes through, like, the older generation's journey, Astrid's journey, the other side characters, the reason why certain things are the way they are, what was expected from them, and why they were considered black sheep or why they weren't.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate it. I actually have family that grew up in Singapore that come and visit, and we think they're a little strange myself, but but this really kind of put it in perspective.
Okay.
And I really appreciated learning that side of Asian culture.
Like, and it wasn't insulting.
It was absolutely not insulting. You have to take the humor in it with a grain of salt, because it's kind of social humor, I guess.
Okay,
like,
okay.
There's all obviously, like, weird culture tics. Like, one of the things that's been cracking me up is explaining, like, the obsession with brand name purses.
Yeah.
And, like, counterfeit culture and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I'm getting a kick out of that, especially being an Asian female that's not really brand, like, into brands.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just nice to kind of see, like, take a step back and see what it actually means to people to have those brand purses and why it's funny.
Well, okay, let's just explain that. You are purely Californian.
Yeah.
Yes, you may be Filipino. Yes, you may be American. But you have grown mostly as a Californian.
Yes.
So,
Californian Asian.
Yes.
Totally proud. Grew up in
LA.
LA, Orange County, Montebello. Like, just that whole life style.
And it's just nothing like that lifestyle.
It's not. And that's why I thought it was so interesting to read, because, I mean, growing up, especially, like, in college, was when I first really got introduced to that, you know, Chinese culture from the, I guess, across the pond.
Yes.
You know, and just, I was always around them, and they had such weird habits as opposed to me. And
yeah.
I have family that flies in from Singapore every once in a while, and they throw me off. So I couldn't get it. I told them to stop giving me designer bags and perfume. I mean, the perfumes throw me off, because it's like some random outlandish stuff. And, you know, you growing up in that culture, because if people, those of you that don't know, Eugene actually isn't from America. He grew up in the Philippines until he was, what, nine?
Yeah, until I was nine.
Yeah, so...
So, like, expensive watches. I never really liked
I couldn't understand it.
I never understood the whole $300, like, sunglasses. I'm like, they're sunglasses. You're gonna break them within a year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I remember a funny story. So, I'm just gonna throw this one funny story. I remember when I first introduced you to Payless.
Oh, yes! What?!
That was so funny.
My family would, like, bring me to Nike Town every year
or
to buy
like
new
Neiman
shoes.
Marcus or what else was there? Nordstrom.
And then, like, the Asian paradise for all middle-class people, Gap. And I'm just like, why do we keep paying for things that just break so fast?
So, I just remember how scandalous it was the first time Eugene rolled in with a pair of Payless shoes.
Yeah, Payless shoes. Like, no brand name shoes.
That was so funny.
Like, I think my mom had a heart attack.
Yeah. She questioned our relationship really hard that day.
But, it was kind of awkward because I fell in love with, like, blue-collar lifestyle while I was in high school. Because, like, my classmates were either actors or, like, children of actors or... They were practically cowboys, you know?
It was like, again, we live in an equestrian town, people, so...
Yeah, so...
If it, like, kind of gives you a little perspective.
Exactly.
We're kind of nestled in the hills of L.A.
Yeah.
We're in the rural part of L.A., if
As
you
they
could
would
ever
call...
believe it.
Yes.
You were saying...
I don't know if it's appropriate, but it's the redneck... side of LA.
They call, yeah, we're the redneck side of LA. If you can believe that's even a thing. It is a thing. I mean, we still sell, like, what, 20-pound carrots in our grocery stores for the people picking up for their horses.
Yeah, we're basically half Caucasian, half Mexican in this area. So, like, a lot of cowboy culture.
Yeah, ranchero culture is prime here.
Exactly. Yeah. So... Yeah, it was just kind of awkward because, like, you know, for the longest time, my friends didn't even understand why the heck my dad was gone all the time. And I didn't know how to explain it to them. Like, I kept telling them, it's normal. It's normal, guys.
Yeah, so that's described in Crazy Rich Asians. Yeah. It talks about...
Absent fathers.
Absent fathers that travel for business, which your father did.
Yeah.
And it explains the whole thing. If you're really curious about it... I think it's a beautiful, modern, playful take on Asians.
Yes.
And Asian culture as a whole. Asian Americans, Asians raised in, you know, parts of Europe, Asians raised in Asia.
Yeah.
And how that kind of all mashes together and Asian culture as a whole right now. So, super fascinating. The other thing I am reading... is As You Wish, The Inconceivable Tales of Making the Princess Bride by Cary Ewells.
Uh-huh.
He's the guy who played Wesley in The Princess Bride.
Ooh.
And it's just all the ooey gooey of what happened and how Princess Bride was this huge flop when it started. But then because of VHS, it went viral.
Right.
Because they actually couldn't categorize it properly back then. And a lot of, believe it or not, a lot of people wanted to produce The Princess Bride, but Hollywood wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole because it was comedy and fantasy, and you didn't do both back then. You had to find a way to market it.
Yeah.
So it was kind of just that no-no, because it was so niche at the time that it wouldn't have made it. And it just talks about the making, the behind the scenes, what the actors did, so on and so forth. It's a great read. I had to stop it because someone actually really recommended for me to listen to the audiobook version of it because it actually has the original actors reading their chapters.
Yes.
So it's kind of a documentary confessional.
Okay.
So that's on my list.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
So, like, Andre the Giant must be there, too.
They talk about him and how it was like working with him, because a lot of people don't know this, but it was near the end of his wrestling career where he could barely stand. So it talks about just his struggles and how he dealt with the pain and, you know, like how people noticed it and because how they gigantism. Handled it. Exactly.
Yeah.
Because people don't realize that was a disease yeah, that exactly. was actually eating him. So it's a fascinating read.
Okay.
Yeah. But shall we move on back to our list?
Yes. Yes, indeed.
What is your number three?
Number three is Dexter Darkly Dreaming by Jeff Lindsay. The reason why is because this is like the easiest read you could have to just enjoy murder mysteries. It's a serial killer that hunts other serial killers. And it's intriguing because I love true crime. And if you know the whole psychology of serial killers is that they cannot feel emotion. They are literally Voldemort or Tom Riddle at birth. And they get in, you know, enticed by killing, and they make it an art form. And Dexter Darkly Dreaming is exactly like the show. I mean, there are like a few things that are different.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an easy read, and you know, it's kind of like just a summary of everything instead of actually being so intense about like what happened during their childhood, what happened to his mind psychologically, what does this, what does that have to do with anything. And it's like, no, he just tells it. He's like, I have to pretend. Yeah, the only coworker I like is this guy that just smiles at like dark humor, and I appreciate that. That kind of deal. So yeah, it's an easy read, to be honest. Good times.
Nice.
What about you?
So I'm just going to recommend a whole trilogy. Because it's one of those good trilogies where you can pick up any of them and read them out of order and it's a good read. Or you can just pick one and it's such a good standalone okay. that it's phenomenal.
Lovely.
Yeah. So I'm going to just explain a little bit of the backstory of why these were created. So the authoress, Linda Buckley Archer, went to Oxford and she's a history buff. And her husband, I believe, I think it was her husband, is actually a rocket scientist.
Okay.
And they were sitting around having a dinner party in the best way possible, because isn't that where great stories came from, like Shelley and
yes.
Frankenstein? And they were talking about the actual science behind time travel. Okay. And what would happen to time travel if someone were to travel to a different time. And what would happen to just the entire timeline of history.
Right.
So she took those theories and wrote this lovely trilogy. And this trilogy is actually going into the 1700s in England.
Huh.
And modern kids going back. I don't want to ruin it all for you, but let's just say a lot of people go back and forth.
Yes.
And it creates this giant timeline mess. But what's really fascinating is just she keeps the characters really accurate to their, you know, their story plots, to their styles. It's just a great read if you like highwaymen, history, conspiracy theories. And some things you can look forward to, which is fascinating, is there's inventors during the French Revolution, highwaymen, there are scientists, and then there are the children. So it's how would all these people handle it?
Nice.
Great characters, really fun read. Okay. Absolutely love it. Highly recommend it to anyone. The running gag for me and Eugene with this book in particular is the first one in the book series is one of the things we always look for when we go to a used bookstore, because I can't begin to tell you how many copies I've lost to people borrowing them.
Yes.
I think we're on our fifth copy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It just happens.
It just happens. I mean, between me being a teacher with my kids and just people, like our friends.
Yeah.
It just gets lost.
All the time.
All the time. And then to make it even funnier, one of the theories, which I've heard, I'm sure you've heard of the grandfather theory of right. time, where your grandfather will disappear if you meet him and yada yada. They discuss that in this book, and I don't want to spoil it, but it's ironic that our third and final book from it always seems to float around and disappear. Not because we're lending it to people, but it's that one haunted thing in our bookshelf that just yeah. seems to always be misplaced or hidden. And we're like, wow, you know, time travel, the one book about time travel is floating around and disappearing on our bookshelves.
Yep.
So I love it. It symbolizes just fun reading for yeah. me. It also symbolizes going and traveling to bookstores. And that's kind of a summer thing that me and Eugene love doing. So
I can't believe it's in the children's section.
Yeah, and it's one of those, why is this a children's book?
Yeah.
It really shouldn't. It really shouldn't. It's really sophisticated.
I mean, like, put it on, like, young adults. I mean, please.
Yeah. But highly recommend the Gideon trilogy.
Okay.
So, let's move on to what is your number two?
Ooh, my number two is Einstein's Dream by Alan Lightman.
Oh.
Imagine E equals MC squared. Actually put into prose? I know it was actually written in both a formula and actually explained in a pro, but really, the whole book are just scenarios after scenarios after scenarios trying to explain to you the concept of the, you know, of the quantum physics of his, you know, theory.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's brilliant. Brilliantly written. It captures, you know, the formula, and it makes it so, how do I put it? Charming.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, I can't say any more, or else it's just going to spoil the story.
Okay.
But, yeah, yeah.
So, you recommend it for?
Summer read? It's awesome. Number two. I mean, like, I kind of want everybody to kind of just enjoy, like, a good afternoon to just drink and read.
So it's a short book.
It's a very short book. Like, okay. Really, like, I could have just gone to Barnes & Noble and actually sat for, like, a good, you know, half hour over a coffee and just finished it. But, yeah, good times.
Nice.
What about you?
So, I don't know if I have to censor this title again.
You're gonna have to.
Okay. So, this is actually a comic book. It's a pretty big comic book. I think it took me, like, 2 days to read. But it's called The Story of My... It's by Jennifer Hayden. It is actually a story done by a illustrator major. And she draws and writes. But it's her life story. And it's done in the perspective of watching people she has loved, get breast cancer, and then in turn her getting breast cancer.
Lovely.
And how that affected her life. And nice. It's a beautiful anthology of just watching generations grow and go.
Oh.
So it goes into her childhood, watching her mom get it, watching people pass away, watching her get married, having kids, eventually getting it herself, how she copes with it, having remembered her mom and that sort of thing.
Right.
And it's just a beautiful book. I think it's something you learn to appreciate even, like, just me getting older. You know, you learn to appreciate understanding, like, your past a little more and what your dreams were and where you went and how you took a turn the way you did.
Yeah.
And just reminiscing. And it just has that vibe through the whole book.
Okay.
Or through the illustrations. Illustrations are super quirky. It's just a bunch of silly line art. It kind of reminds me of Dilbert. Oh. Or Farside.
Yes.
If any of you are familiar with that. So it's that similar format, but it's just a really touching love story to people in her life. and herself.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's lovely.
So, before we move on to the final, I thought we should do some honorable mentions that didn't make your list for the five, but you would still recommend as a summer read.
All right.
Do you have a few?
I have a lot. okay. This, just because I enjoy K. Arthur stuff. Sir Gawain and the Green Knight.
Ooh, that's always a good one.
Yeah. No one knows the real author, but one of the editors is Burton Raphael. That one's actually the one I actually got introduced to when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always fun. For those that are in college or in high school, Waiting for Godot by Samuel Beckett. It's a lot of fun because it basically just does the theater formula and breaks it down and gets you to understand the human condition at its rawest. Like, you don't have to put any scenario, like, having a job or anything. It just does that. Misanthrope by Molière.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. I love that one over Tartuffe, to be honest. Even though Tartuffe is the one that's like, hush, hush, my God, Molière hasn't even watched it himself. But it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of couplets for those that are used to Shakespeare. This was way before the sonnets were actually popularized into theater. And, of course, it's French, so there's always a translation to the every version. Let's see. There's Looking Up by Michael J. Fox.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this one, I feel like it's more for, our generation or somewhat older, because it deals with his Parkinson's throughout his career and his retirement.
Okay, yeah. So it's that side that I noticed it was really hushed in the media.
Yeah.
When his career was around and he kind of pulled away, so I guess that's really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, he was doing a lot in Spin City, and he was suffering with Parkinson's during Spin City. And he did an amazing job going through that. Love by Pablo Neruda.
Oh, yes.
Now, if you guys know anything about Pablo Neruda, he is very romantic. Sometimes illicitly romantic.
We had Pablo Neruda recited at our reception banquet.
Yeah, and I actually suggested Napoleon, and you slapped me for that. I was like, I don't know, I thought he was fun.
we had a book theme reception.
Yes.
For people. So
every table was actually named after an author.
An author and book, and we had quotes on each table. So
yes. It was lovely.
We were at the Snicket table. That was the main party table for all of you.
And let's see, The Fencing Master by Arturo Perez Reverte.
Oof.
I know. Say that 10 times fast. Obviously, this is all about fencing. If you guys actually are taking fencing lessons, this is a fun one to know because it'll actually review probably some of your beginning lessons, like how powerful a thrust is, how tactical is a catcher. But all in all, it's a murder mystery, and it's written by a Spanish speaking author, so the translation may not be up to par sometimes, but it's so much fun. So much fun.
Nice.
What about you?
So I can definitely recommend a few. I would definitely recommend the Bridget Jones trilogy by Helen Fielding.
Nice.
My favorite, believe it or not, was Mad About the Boy, which was the last one. And I think I have a sentimental feel to it because it just talks about, after all the whimsy, how do you deal with things? I don't want to give away too much, but she's a single mother.
Yeah.
Surprise, she gets married. I'm not going to tell you to who.
Oh my God.
And it just talks about, I guess, still trying to be relevant when you're not in your 20s.
Scandalous.
And how to like, brave social media and how to deal with all the different, I guess, obstacles. Like, it goes over cougarism and just being a single mom or trying to be, like, zero waste even. Like, just all the things, women, that you question and you go on your feed and you always feel like there's that one person that does it a bazillion times better and you're like, where do you get off, woman? Like, how do you live this life? And I just think that societal pressure is, like, so humorously neatly packaged in Mad About the Boy.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of a love letter that Helen Fielding wrote to women that grew up with her books, especially in the 90s, and then have watched the series or the series of movies.
Exactly.
So it's great. Definitely recommend Guy de Maupassant. I mean, if you've been listening to this series, you know he's my favorite short story writer. Some of the few I would recommend is The Necklace is kind of the go-to classic.
Yes.
But my favorite short from him would definitely have to be Ball of Fat. I mean, obviously me being fat and a societal questionnaire, you know, surprise, like the questions of everything and just the way society treats you. I mean, just it's phenomenal that in the 1800s there was something written about that,
right?
And just how like nothing's changed pretty much. So if you like a good poke at society, highly recommend it. Speaking of pokes at society, I definitely recommend the Marie Antoinette series by Juliet Gray.
Okay.
Probably not the third one unless you appreciate dark humor like I do. The third one just talks about the French Revolution and how Marie Antoinette and the royal family had to deal with the exile and everything.
Right.
But the first and second book are very fascinating. I actually read them out of order. I read the second, followed by the first, followed by the third.
Well, then.
And I would say the second one's probably the most, I guess, jovial and engaging, but the third book had to have been my favorite.
Huh.
Even though it was dark and horrible.
Yeah.
And it really talks about just, I don't know if people know this, but like my biggest fear is actually mob mentality. And the French Revolution was nothing shy of that, but it's just interesting to see how the people dealt with that.
Right.
And how she dealt with that. It's a great read. One more last book I would recommend. So I would recommend Voyage of the Sable Venus and Other Poems by Robin Cost Lewis.
Ooh.
The reason why I'm recommending this is I think it's really popular right now to try and understand racism and Semitism.
Yes.
Especially with the Black Lives Matter movement. And I feel like out of my reading list, this is probably the most relevant.
Right.
Last year, she was actually our laureate winner.
Yes.
For Los Angeles. And Tales of the Sable Venus is actually a beautiful poem where she took a bunch of titles of African American and Black art in America and just put them all together one after the other to just give us all a perspective of how that kind of art and that kind of subject matter is treated even just by culture and society up until now. And it's not a very like, you should do this, this or that, but it's just like it's out there. There's the evidence for you to look at.
Right.
And it also just goes through, like, the emotional, like, the mental state of how that affects people.
Yeah.
So, I love it for that.
That's
and
beautiful.
If you're looking for something where you like understanding, but you're not quite understanding, and you want it on a more humanistic level, definitely recommend that book.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay. So, which leads us to this.
Final yes. recommendation. What is your final recommendation?
The Vampire Lestat by Anne Rice.
I actually didn't see that coming.
I know I have complained about bad writing, but my goodness, good storytelling is good storytelling. So, wonderful thing about The Vampire Lestat is that I feel like it actually gets you closer to, like, the purity of goth culture.
Wow, that was just a pretentious mouthful in its own.
Yes! It's exactly it! That's exactly it! Because when you hang out with goth people and they, like, lower their defenses, they are so corny and so geeky in a way. And it's just amazing. It's so much fun. I mean, The Vampire Lestat actually begins in the era of prior to Marie Antoinette.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the very Georgian type
of Rococo era?
Yeah. Yeah. Which is why he's so flashy when you watch the movie Interview with a Vampire.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, he's like an enthusiast for medieval weaponry, and he has a mace, he has crossbows, when obviously everyone is shooting guns at the time.
That sounds like a video game.
Yeah, right? Like, I felt like I was reading a Castlevania, and he like took on wolves with his mastiffs. And it was just, I was cringing half the time. And at the same time, I just couldn't help but root for him. Like, you could do it, man. Yeah, you're a hero. Oh, he's so badass. I feel so ashamed.
That kind of sounds like those, like, internet humor videos.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, okay, so what's that video we watched, the Shia LaBeouf song?
Yes, the Shia LaBeouf.
We're going to have to put that on the blog.
Oh, we are going to.
But
now,
it's just that kind of humor. What else was there? There was like another one about Chuck Norris and T-Rexes or something.
Yes.
It just sounds exactly in that
spectrum.
That line. Yeah.
Yep. And, you know, just along the way, you just have to like start reading more of it. And I was just like, wow. No wonder we appreciate The Room. You know? And I don't know.
It's funny you bring that up.
I know. Inappropriate. But
no.
You think?
It's appropriate. Why? Because I don't want to cut you off. Are you done?
Yeah, I'm practically done.
Okay, so my top book.
Okay. Well, then.
Because I was just inspired by the tea, and I think, you know, the tea's about California and just California culture. And I was thinking about just what makes me laugh. I think everybody's looking for a good book to laugh with right now.
Yeah.
So I picked The Disaster Artist, My Life Inside the Room.
Oh!
By the greatest movie ever made by Greg Sestero.
Oh! I was not expecting that.
Yeah. So let's backtrack and explain The Room to people, like, without ruining The Room.
It is the most surrealist movie you will ever watch. Do not watch it with your parents.
So, just a little history on The Room. It's kind of this early 1990s phenomenon, like, around that era. I think it was early 2000.
Yeah, it was.
It is historically the most expensive indie film ever made to this date. And just, first you have to watch it, and then just question your existence, and then you need to understand the history behind it. But if you drove up and down San Fernando Valley, which is near where we live, you would find Room billboards everywhere. And we're gonna put a picture of these billboards. They look ominous.
Yes.
It's just a guy staring. It's all black and white and moody. It looks like something Vampire Lestat would do.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just says, "Can you really trust people?" or something along those lines. And it was to promote this indie film, which now it's an occult classic and people actually do screenings and, like, there's whole rituals involved with it. There's the football. I mean, it's just completely out there.
Yes.
You'll have to censor me on that.
Should I?
I don't know.
It's appropriate.
But it's just absolutely insane. And Greg Sestero was the actor, he was the supporting role.
Yeah.
Actor in
The Room.
The Room, yeah. He was Mark.
Yeah.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Oh, hi.
but this is actually his confessional about how he met Tommy Wiseau and how he became his friend and how The Room came about. And believe it or not, he is a resident of South Pasadena. So he supports the library systems. He's a honorary, beautiful published author. He's a local. And he just pays homage not just to, California as a whole, because he grew up in Frisco and then moved down here to LA area, SoCal. But it's a whirlwind. I think it just captures the dream of Hollywood and, the crazy shenanigans that go on here. And postdates
all the broken dreams. Yeah. You know? That's literally it.
But it does it in such a heartfelt, humorous way that can only be The Room.
Exactly.
So,
Tommy Wiseau, you have made a bar so high that we can't help but applaud every
absolutely
time we hear it.
Absolutely. I am toasting to you, sir.
All right.
Cheers. Cheers. But any of you, and I say this jokingly but half serious, any of you that are considering moving to Los Angeles and want to know what you're in for,
oh, God,
read The Room or read this book.
Yes.
The Disaster Artist. Honestly, the movie that was made by, I forgot that guy.
Which one?
They made the movie The Disaster Artist.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot the guy who made it. I'm sorry.
Oh my God, that's so sad.
It's on the tip of my tongue, but he did it justice, but it's just, if you really want it in its purest form, The Disaster Artist is a bazillion times better. The book is incredible. Great read. Highly recommend.
Yeah.
If you can get your hands on the audiobook, Greg Sestero reads it also, and he has the best Tommy Wiseau impression. And yes, he does it in the Tommy Wiseau character impression.
Yes.
It's a great read.
Amazing.
So.
That was amazing. Thank you. Wow.
And that is our. Oh.
Just go right ahead. Finish up.
Oh, but that's our conclusion.
That is our conclusion.
This is our final of our season one. We're looking into doing a season two. I didn't think we'd get this far.
Maybe we'll do it about writers?
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, I was thinking that, or a lot of people are into DIY home improvements because we're all stuck at home. So yeah. Maybe I'd talk more about just libraries and the design elements and making a library for your home. I mean, we talked about how to collect for your home library, but we never really talked about, the cozy side of it. The hygge. Side. Am I saying that right?
Not sure. Either way.
But tell us. Let us know. I mean, would you like something, what theme would you guys enjoy next season?
I'll put up a quiz.
We'll come up with a few ideas and we'll have amazing. You guys vote. Yeah, thank you guys so much for interacting. It's just been a lot of fun. We're so grateful that we've been able to create this fun space for all the readers out there.
Yeah, a lot of us feel alone just because obviously we do the reading.
And we have weird habits too, which is why we created this series in the first place.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm sure there are plenty of podcasts out there that already do book reviews, but
we're here for the bibliophiles.
Yeah, we're here for all your weird habits in a very non-judgmental space. I think this is the only review recommending aspect of our series. I guess this will be a tradition from here on out.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
So, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
And that concludes season 1, Bibliosynensis.
Cheers.